Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
When I reached Mark Joseph Stern, who covers the federal judiciary for Slate, I had one simple question for him. How weird is it at the Supreme Court right now?
It's really weird. I will tell you that I am not allowed in because only a small group of journalists who are called hard pass holders who register with the court annually are allowed in right now because of COVID protocols. It's unfortunate because I feel like there is so much body language going on and I'm missing all of it. So I can only say from, you know, reporting and what oozes through the audio that it is a very fraught and toxic environment these days.
If you think your workplace is difficult to hang out in right now, consider the plight of these nine justices, a cabinet of rivals forced to come together day after day, even though it is clear to just about everyone how little they can agree on. It's hard to say when the atmosphere became fraught and toxic, but the pandemic certainly did not help.
Early on, when the court was only doing arguments over the telephone, it revealed a very gendered dynamic about who gets to speak and who doesn't, because the male justices were frequently interrupting the female justices. Chief Justice Roberts, who was supposed to be giving each justice equal time, ended up allowing people like Alito and Gorsuch to blab over their allotted time. And so you ended up seeing the men really dominate the argument. And I'll say that that does include Breyer, who is a liberal, but he tends to just prattle on and on.
And it's not just the mansplaining making things awkward.
Now we're seeing a totally different problem, which is the, I call it mask gate. Neil Gorsuch refusing to wear his mask, Alito and Thomas periodically taking off their masks, Sotomayor having to phone in from her chambers because she's afraid of getting COVID.
Justice Sotomayor is a diabetic, we should say. So she's very high risk.
She's very high risk. She's a diabetic. She's been very open about it. And, you know, it's a bit ironic because she's been publishing a series of children books that that are about not only dealing with disabilities as a child, but helping your friends deal with their own disabilities when you are a child. So it's like, you know, ask your friend how you can be helpful. They're called like just ask, you know, common courtesy, common decency can mean so much when people have disabilities.
And Neil Gorsuch wrote a whole book himself lamenting the loss of civility in public life, right?
Yes. I mean, if I wrote this as a fictional screenplay, it would seem too on the nose, right? And would get thrown out. Neil Gorsuch wrote a whole book about how we need to be more civil to each other, bemoaning the decline of etiquette and interpersonal kindness in both public and private life, explaining why he himself tries to be a gracious and courteous person. And then he goes and pulls this stunt, which is the opposite of everything that he counts in that book. I think there must be two Gorsuches, and it's like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde situation, and we have been seeing nothing but Mr. Hyde lately.
Today on the show, COVID collides with the court. This awkward workplace is also ruling on federal COVID policy, which is making for some pretty confusing decisions. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next. Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. The Supreme Court's awkward dance when it comes to COVID burst into full view earlier this month. That's when the justices heard a couple of challenges to the Biden administration's coronavirus vaccine mandates. One case took aim at mandates for medical workers, and the justices decided to uphold that mandate, arguing that a mandate here, in hospitals, would keep patients and employees safer. The other case was broader, taking on those workplace vaccine mandates. The Biden administration had tried to do this through OSHA, you know, the Occupational Health and Safety Administration. Their rule here applied to employers with 100 or more workers. Either get them vaccinated or test them weekly. And this mandate, it got blocked on a 6-3 vote. Mark Joseph Stern found the conservative justices' logic here questionable.
They issue a decision saying that OSHA is not really trying to regulate the workplace because COVID is not a workplace issue. And if you go to supremecourt.gov right now, as we speak, you will see a notice that says, out of concern for the health and safety of the public and Supreme Court employees, the Supreme Court building will be closed. So the Supreme Court has closed its doors to protect its workers from catching COVID. But the Supreme Court has also declared that as a matter of federal law, COVID is not a threat to the workplace or a workplace issue. I don't see how you can square those positions.
If you're getting whiplash from these two rulings, you're not alone. But Mark says, even more important than the decisions here are the arguments the justices are willing to entertain, even if those arguments didn't ultimately win the day. Because these arguments, they're extreme.
There is a growing conviction in the conservative legal movement that much of the federal government is unconstitutional.
Hold it. What? Most of the government is unconstitutional?
Most of government is unconstitutional. That is not my own formulation. That is a direct quote from Justice Elena Kagan criticizing this theory, which has been embraced at least in part by 5 justices of the current court.
That seems like a big deal.
It is a really big deal. The way that our government works is not really the Schoolhouse Rock version of, you know, pass a bill, signed into law, Supreme Court gets a thwack at it, and then it's done. Instead, what happens is Congress passes a law with some really broad goals. End air pollution, restrict mercury in the water, protect health and safety in the workplace. And then it tasks some executive agency with figuring out how to accomplish that goal. So Congress doesn't pass a bill saying you can have this many milliliters of mercury in your water. It passes a bill saying the EPA needs to figure out how much mercury in the water is safe and then regulate according to that standard.
Which makes sense because I don't really trust some random congressman to know what level of mercury should be in the water.
Exactly right. You do not want Ted Cruz deciding how much mercury can be in your children's water fountains at school. And this grant of power to an executive agency is called a delegation. And it happens all the time. And it is just how the government works in 2022 and how the government has worked for more than 100 years. Because we're a big country and life is complicated and there's a gazillion problems. And luckily, we have an entire executive branch that's filled with experts and doctors and scientists and professionals whose life goal is to deal with these problems. So Congress says, you guys, here's your goal, figure it out. You're going to do the work. And we're going to retain the power at any time to overrule you. So there is direct congressional oversight of these agencies at all times. And so Congress has sort of reached this agreement with the executive branch where lawmakers give it some goals, the experts try to accomplish the goals, and at the end of the day, if Congress doesn't like it, it can just overrule them.
So was your fear that looking at these two Supreme Court cases, the justices, especially the very conservative justices, might look at them and say, hey, we don't actually think these agencies have that kind of authority?
So that was my sort of second order fear. My first order fear is that the justices would say, well, we do think the agencies arguably have this authority, but we think that this renders the laws and the regulations unconstitutional and unenforceable because Congress gave these agencies such broad and sweeping and ambiguous discretion that it delegated away its own legislative powers in violation of the Constitution. And so even if this rule theoretically allows for a vaccinator test mandate or a healthcare mandate, we're going to strike it down because it contravenes the actual Constitution, not just some statute.
So, I mean, fear aside, it does seem to me like these cases going in front of the Supreme Court, it was a needed intervention because I'm looking at, like, for instance, what's been going on in a state like Florida, your home state, where the rules there seem to directly contradict what the Biden administration wants to do. Like, local Florida governments cannot impose vaccine mandates. So don't you need cases like this to go up to the Supreme Court to kind of figure this out?
Yes. And, you know, here's the one good thing I'll say about the Supreme Court today. It treated these cases with the seriousness that they deserved. It did not try to just resolve them on the shadow docket in a one paragraph unsigned order released at midnight. Instead, it diligently took up these cases, scheduled them for super expedited oral arguments, and released decisions less than a week later. I think that's healthy. I think that's the best case scenario procedurally. And I agree with you that the courts, and specifically SCOTUS, needed to resolve these one way or the other, because it wasn't just that some states had conflicting rules. It was that the law was different in different parts of the country. Like, this healthcare rule, it was upheld by some appeals courts and struck down by others. So whether or not you were subject to it depends on what state you live in. And that's not how federal law is supposed to work. It's supposed to be uniform. So I was glad that the court intervened. And I'll even say procedurally, I'm glad that it stepped in the way that it did, because we needed an answer on this.
And like we said, we did get an answer here. It just wasn't as straightforward as some conservative activists had hoped for, because that healthcare mandate stayed in place. And even though the court blocked the OSHA mandate, the justices didn't do that because of administrative state overreach. Not quite. Instead, the justices ruled against a workplace mandate because COVID isn't just a workplace threat. It's a threat outside the workplace, too.
They split the baby, basically. And as usual, you saw Brett Kavanaugh and John Roberts deciding which way the court would swing. And the court ultimately blocked the employer mandate by a 6-3 vote with all of the conservatives lined up, and allowed the healthcare mandate by a 5-4 vote with Roberts and Kavanaugh siding with the liberals.
I have so many questions about this. Like, first of all, does this mean the moderates on the court are now John Roberts and Brett Kavanaugh?
Yes, it does. In fact, John Roberts is now the fourth most liberal member of the court, and Brett Kavanaugh is objectively the median vote, or the swing justice.
But does it make sense to split the baby here? To say, like, okay, OSHA can't decide that there's a workplace mandate, but Medicare and Medicaid can decide that there's a healthcare mandate?
So I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth and get angry about receiving half a loaf here, because I am genuinely happy that the court upheld the healthcare mandate, and I think it's more important than a lot of observers recognize. But I don't think you can actually square these two opinions logically. They feel like they came from two totally different courts, because both of these cases involve super duper broad delegations of power. In the employer case, Congress said, hey, OSHA, you need to figure out when there are hazardous substances that pose a grave threat to workplace safety and do whatever you need to do to protect workers against them. And Congress also said, hey, Secretary of Health, Health and Human Services, you need to figure out how best to protect the health and safety of patients at your facilities and pass whatever regulations are necessary to keep them alive. And both of those delegations are like simultaneously broad and kind of specific. They say, here is the goal. It's a pretty clear goal. We all acknowledge what it means. And here are the tools you have and the tools you do not have to fix it. And yet the court came out on one side and said, okay, well, OSHA doesn't get to do this because it doesn't have the tools, and came out on the other side and said, well, Health and Human Services does get to do this because it does have the tools. But both of the statutes are equally clear or equally ambiguous, depending on what side you're on. And I don't understand how a rational person could split the baby the way that the court did.
But I have to say, I'm surprised by your reaction here. Usually you are the, like, burn it down, I can't believe y'all did this person when it comes to the Supreme Court. And I'm surprised to see you saying, like, there's some good here. This is okay.
You know, that's like exactly what Dahlia Lithwick said when I put this reaction in Slack after these decisions came down. But she followed it up with, like, you just have Stockholm syndrome. And maybe that's true. Like, maybe I just am trying to protect my brain from the depths of despair that it would otherwise be plunging into. But I think that with this court, you have to accept any win that you can. And what I'd like to believe is that in both of these opinions, but especially in the healthcare opinion, the court looked at the range of possibilities and selected the one that least damages the administrative state and the federal government's ability to function. And so even though I hate the employer mandate decision, I have to acknowledge that it doesn't go nearly as far as I thought it would in ripping up and just shredding the executive branch's discretion to govern. And that, to me, feels like a real silver lining.
When we come back, how long will Mark Joseph Stern's optimism about this Supreme Court last? My guess is not that long.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights. Gay rights now! Gay rights! With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
and activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.
So what you most feared from these vaccine mandate decisions did not happen. The justices did not disassemble the administrative state for you. But you've written about how this will not be the last of the cases that ask this question of how far the administrative state can go. So when are we going to be talking about this next?
In 1 month, because there is no reprieve from this Supreme Court. Next month,
the hits keep on coming.
Yeah, absolutely. So next month, the court's going to hear a case that challenges the EPA's ability to regulate and restrict carbon emissions at power plants. And it is just the exact same problem that we've been discussing, just sort of transposed onto the environment instead of COVID. So the question once again is, was Congress specific enough in delegating this power to the EPA? Because Congress did not say you need to restrict carbon. Instead, Congress said you, experts at the EPA, need to figure out what emissions are harming humans and harming the planet and come up with a scheme to limit them. And so the question here—
Hold it. I know the answer to that, though. The answer is carbon.
Yeah. Well, it should be. I mean, like, carbon's pretty bad. Like, carbon is causing lots of people to die and causing extreme weather events and causing rising seas. And it seems to fit really well within this whole statutory scheme. But the question for the court is, well, do they want to seize on this case to say, even if carbon fits into this scheme, that means the scheme is unconstitutional because it gives the EPA too much leeway. And so we're just going to issue this really sweeping decision that boxes in the EPA and every other agency from doing anything creative or helpful with existing law because, in our view, Congress wasn't explicit enough.
Given that you've just seen these vaccine mandate decisions come down really quickly, and kind of in a surprising way to you, does that make you look any differently at this EPA case and where it might land?
So it does. And here's why. First of all, you know, again, in the healthcare mandate case, Roberts and Kavanaugh sided with the liberals in a very reasonable decision about a very broad delegation, which suggests to me that they are just sort of using their own personal sense of what should be the law to guide themselves. And here it was so clear cut. The entire American medical profession lined up in support of this rule. So they were like, well, we're not going to overrule these folks. And I think they also exerted some influence in the employer mandate case because that was really fractured into two different opinions. You have the majority opinion just reading the statute very narrowly, saying, well, we don't think COVID is a workplace issue, so we don't think OSHA can really do this. And then you have a separate opinion with Neil Gorsuch, Clarence Thomas, and Sam Alito saying, well, even if the statute allowed this, then it would be unconstitutional, which is the radical and scary kind of third door. And it's noteworthy that Roberts, Kavanaugh, and Barrett did not walk through that third door. They played their cards a little bit closer and ended up just signing on to a nonsensical but not super destructive opinion. So maybe that's what'll happen in this EPA case. Maybe the court's not going to rip up the entire framework for regulating all pollutants and emissions and is just going to read the statute with an artificial narrowness. That would be bad, but it will not be nearly as bad as if the court invokes some ridiculous atextual doctrine to erase or repeal large chunks of environmental law and prevent the EPA from doing anything helpful ever.
It is interesting to begin to see the court take shape where we're seeing this kind of middle group, where you have Kavanaugh, where you have Roberts, where you have Amy Coney Barrett. And I don't want to, like, give in to the this is fine, you know, sort of feeling. But it is interesting to see where people are beginning to land the more cases we hear argued.
Yeah. And I think that the conservative legal movement is probably the biggest player in testing the boundaries of these justices, because what happens is, as the court shifts right, the window of plausible challenges gets wider and wider and stretches farther to the right. And so we see particularly Republican attorneys general in places like Texas bringing wackier and wackier challenges, and some of them they end up winning. I mean, this OSHA case, I think it would have come out differently, maybe even like 5 or 6 years ago. Certainly, I think 20 years ago. And similarly, you have cases like, I don't know, this EPA case, where there is a real chance that the court's going to destroy environmental law in this country, would not have happened 10 years ago. But on the other hand, on the other side of the ledger, you've got cases like that challenge to Obamacare that tried to repeal the entirety of Obamacare, and by a 7-2 vote, the court turns it away. So that's helping conservative lawyers kind of calibrate where the sweet spot is on this court. They say, okay, well, we can get Kavanaugh and Barrett and Roberts to push this far, but no further. And they figure out, we can do this much work to further our goals within that frame, but if we push too far, then it's going to backfire in our faces.
You're telling me the Supreme Court for like a Republican attorney general is like a brand new Maserati? You just got to see how fast this puppy can go.
Absolutely. Look, they are saying that in their legislation. They are saying that on the floor of their state houses. They are, these Republican lawmakers in the states are actually openly declaring, now that we have Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh on the bench, we are going to try X, Y, and Z. This was even mentioned by, I believe, Justice Sotomayor in arguments over the fate of Roe versus Wade back in December. She said, we have these legislative statements saying that we're just going to test how far the court will go with these new members. It's not a secret. It's being done in the open. And anyone who denies it is just denying an objective fact.
It's funny timing to me, all of this conversation that we're having now about the Supreme Court and whether they want to knock more decisions over to Congress or not. And I say it's funny timing because at the same time that these cases, the vaccine mandate cases and this EPA case next month are coming before the court, the Senate is talking a lot about the filibuster. And the filibuster is a lot of the reason why Congress has trouble getting things done at the moment. And it just seems like we're stuck in a trap where Congress can't get things done. The executive does things using their authority. And then the Supreme Court says, actually, Congress should be doing that. And it feels a little like we're stuck if that's the case.
So I agree. And I don't think it's particularly contested that in a system with separation of powers, power tends to flow from the branches that are stuck to the branches that are working. And that is sort of the story of the Supreme Court in modern times. You know, Congress cannot figure out how to pass new environmental legislation, so the Supreme Court decides environmental policy. Congress cannot figure out the scope of federal non-discrimination law, so the Supreme Court steps in and does it. Congress cannot pass or figure out the scope of vaccine mandates, so the Supreme Court steps in. This is how the government works now. The Supreme Court is by far the most powerful and important policymaking body in this country. And there are a lot of reasons why, but one that I think is often overlooked is the fact that it runs on a pretty strict schedule. It hears arguments and releases opinions within a few months. It works as an institution decently well. The wheels are greased. The justices, you know, are not sort of trying to filibuster each other. And so at the end of the day, when Congress can't act, the Supreme Court just grows bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mark Joseph Stern, I love picking your brain. Thanks for coming on the show.
Always a pleasure. Please get vaccinated. Don't listen to the Supreme Court. Everyone should get vaccinated and boosted. It is good for you. It is good for your coworkers. It is good for your family and your friends.
And wear a mask around your immunocompromised friends.
And wear a freaking mask.
Be a pal.
Okay? Like, around
come on.
Your immunocompromised colleagues. Like, wear a freaking mask, people. Be a good human. Meet the minimal standards of human decency. Be better than Neil Gorsuch and put on a freaking mask.
Mark Joseph Stern covers the Supreme Court for Slate. And that is our show. What Next is produced by Danielle Hewitt, Elena Schwartz, Carmel Del Shad, and Mary Wilson. We are led by Allison Benedict and Alicia Montgomery. And I'm Mary Harris. You can go track me down on Twitter. I'm at Mary's Desk. Catch you back here tomorrow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.